and you end up talking about listening, and you have to start saying over again. The latency of the compression techniques has gotten out of hand in some cell phone systems, I think. KETVJ, K2IW.
And so we are... Okay. Now we're talking the real language here. This is the land of your son, actually. There's a number of different things that are happening. Yes, the codec has a delay, but the codec doesn't have a delay in terms of seconds. It has a delay in terms of milliseconds. This ADPGM is an interesting codec. It's a ULAW codec. It's actually quite old, but they still use it. It's not as efficient as some things that we do today, but it does give you a reasonable reproduction in the end. The concept of switching is really not much of an issue in terms of switching, you know, whatever the path is. You're still talking, you're still in the microsecond range. You're not in the not even in the millisecond range. The reason why some...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Unfortunately, Eric, that was a full minute's worth of timeout. But these codecs, you think the fidelity is pretty good. But there are a number of cell phone systems that I've had conversations with people where I wouldn't be able to recognize my mother's voice, so to speak. The distortion was so bad. And the delay on top of that is such that on a number of occasions I've told the person, you got to call me back on a wire telephone. We're having much too much dropout of information that's not getting through. Maybe Rich has run into some of these problems. N2EO, K2IW, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, good evening, Dick, from N2EO. No, not on a cell phone, never. I have Metro PCS, which is part of T-Mobile. I've never had that problem. But what I did want to say, Dick, is before they had cable TV in Queens, when I was living there, you had it in white, you had it out here. So I put in DirecTV. I had internet, and first internet, with, in the early days, let me let it drop. In the early days, you had to go up on the telephone line and down on the satellite. And then later on, they upgraded, and with DirecTV, I was able to go up on the satellite and down on the satellite. And I had internet and television. And I thought it was very nice. I had no problems with it at all. It was a bigger dish. It was not an 18-inch dish. It was an oval-shaped dish they put up, and I thought everything was fine. I had a digital TV, which when me and Patty got together, we still have it in the house. And now Time Warner, the cable company.
Rich, when you had that larger oval dish, where all of your communication, telephone, and cable TV was all done by satellite uplink and downlink. Two questions. Roughly how expensive was that hardware? You might not know because you were renting it. How expensive was that service? And what kind of bandwidth do you think you were getting? Could you download a movie with that system at a reasonable rate? N2EO, K2IW.
Okay, Dick, I didn't download movies, but I was able to communicate over the internet just fine. I don't remember the exact prices, it was a long time ago, but the upgrade with the dish and the box, it was something like $300-something. It was $100 a month, roughly, for television and internet. And the telephone, I was still using a landline because it's a long time ago, there was still Marbell.
The
DirecTV VSAT is about $60 a month. You want the bigger one, it's $80 a month.
What kind of bandwidth can that give you in the downlink or uplink, Eric Glenn?
The downlink is good. You can get upwards of 30, 40 megabits if you want to pay for it. The uplink is really stinks. As a DirecTV satellite. It was originally the Hear system, but then again, DirecTV was originally here. So, but the VSAT's KA.
That system that you're describing right now, Eric, would that be a good solution for the people on Fire Island? Does it have enough bandwidth to keep them happy? Does it have a low enough cost? Would it substitute for what is being proposed and what they've lost? KE2EJ,
K2IW. K2IW, KE2EJ. You and I both know there ain't nothing going to beat fiber. You know, you could use Magic Jack with it, but you'd have to power it. Because this is geostationary, you know? So you got a lot of mileage to go through before you get anywhere. So I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, it's a good way to do internet because, you know, you type something and you hit return. A lot of times you're waiting for a site to come back, not really because of the connection, simply because the site has a lot of traffic or like a slow machine. We forget, it only spits things out so fast, so. That's just the way it is. Most people don't realize that what you're actually receiving that runs your browser is really text. So, you know, whatever that serial speed is, that's it. That's as fast as your browser loads up and displays stuff. So, with satellites, you don't really care. Or at least you don't notice. Phone, forget it.
So we got to take
Rich recognized, get you in a second. With all of the systems we've discovered tonight, that we've discussed tonight, Eric, are you still of the opinion that purely wireless broadband, with all of the zillions of microcell sites that would be required to pull it off, you still think that's the best way to get this linear neighborhood? Fire Island is lots of miles long, not very many miles wide, and it's a tough environment. Do you still think a thoroughly wireless microcell site-like system is the best way to go by comparison to satellite or fiber, ruggedized fiber? And you think there's a company going to come out of the woodwork somewhere that's going to finance this for those people? KE2EJ, K2IW.
K2IW, K2EJ. You know, I spent 2 weeks a year on Fire Island, actually at Ocean Beach. And I'm willing to bet that if I put a meeting together with the town boys, you know, the local community boys, and said to them, well, let's put our own fiber system up, and we'll do some microwave over to the mainland, and we'll plug in somewhere, and we'll take care of it ourselves. Whereas we, in essence, could hire a fiber company to come and put stuff up, and buy the appropriate modem for each end and set up a head end, and away you go. Fiber ultimately is the better way to go. You still got to get some connectivity to the mainland. That's where the phone company comes in. And they think about, oh, we've got to run something under the water. That's expensive. And that's a yearly expense, too. Whereas they think of wireless, it's like, there's no expense at all. Got to keep it going. You know, you and I were going to do it. It'd be fiber would be my choice, that's for sure.
Eric, why wouldn't you, with your affluent people that you speak to on Fire Island, why wouldn't they run Fire Island, why wouldn't they run cable, fiber cable, either under the water or across the Robert Moses Bridge? Why not run a piece of fiber to the mainland, and now you've got fiber almost everywhere? Why wouldn't that be the cheapest way to go? KE2EJ, K2IW.
Well, again, just like anything, it depends on how long is it going to be there, what the flight's going to be, how it's going to cost to put in. I don't know if that's the cheapest way to go. But then, why hasn't somebody asked, it's not Cablevision anymore, I can't think of the name of it, the Dutch company that now owns them, that they should suggest that, you know, they bring Cablevision to the island. They're perfectly capable of doing it. I mean, there's solutions here. It's just a matter of who wants to pony up to the ante, you know.
Okay, we've got N2EO and I think it was John also in that order. N2EO, go ahead, John, Rich, KQIW.
Okay, Dick, you know, I had upgraded the system on DirecTV, and I like, you asked me if I downloaded movies. No. But I did have TV on a digital TV. In fact, me and Patty still have that set in this house. And, I got a lot of nice channels, the same as the cable channels, and, you know, and it was wonderful. I thought it was great. That was a time when they still didn't have cable in Queens. I don't know why. Maybe somebody could tell me why they didn't have cable in Queens. Also, me and Patty have a mutual friend in Florida. Her name is Jerry. She's the gal that introduced us, and she's like a sister to me. And she had to give up her internet, because down there it's a small community, and it's over $100 a month, she told me, just for internet. So she had to give it up. Could somebody tell me why? Because we discussed it, and I'd like to tell her why. Gotcha.
You didn't make it clear. I'm guessing you're asking, why did it suddenly become $100 for internet when it used to be cheaper? Is that the question, Rich? Go ahead.
Oh, this gal in Florida had to give up internet. Her name is Jerry. This is the gal that introduced us together. And she had to give up her internet because she's in a small community, tiny town. And she had to pay over $100 a month for internet. Couldn't afford it, and gave it up.
I got an answer for him.
You got it, Eric. Wait for the beep.
Depends upon which part of Florida. There's two major companies that provide services in just about all of Florida. One of them is called CenturyLink, which is the takeover of Southern Bell, the copper system. And the other is Comcast. Now, Comcast is notorious for being cheap and even metering the amount of data that they use. And they jacked up their prices about 20%. So, CenturyLink said, oh, well, let's do the same thing. And it's gotten ridiculous. And it's probably going to come back down. But, you know, $100 a month for internet? No, it's probably more like 60 or 70. It sounds like they've got a combined service internet telephone, TV. Both of them offer the services, but CenturyLink does a lot of it over DSL modems, which is pathetic, but they're changing their system as time goes on. KDRIW, K2EJ.
Eric, give me an estimate. The average person in Long Island who has the combined fiber system of internet, cable TV, and telephone, he's got those three services, and he's not buying all the premium channels on TV, he's got some medium speed on internet, and he's got telephone. Make me a rough guess. A person with that quasi-bare bones triple fiber system on Long Island, what's your guess as to what he's paying in dollars per month? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
Well, if you're lucky enough, you don't live in Brookhaven Town, and you're in most of the places in Long Island, or at least in Nassau County, and a good chunk of Suffolk. You can get fires for like, what is it, $66 for all three for a single phone line. I think it's 15 megs up and down. Not only do you get the local count, but you get a little bit. You get the MTV, you get the in-between stuff, the C-span, nothing premium. But yeah, you can get it down. And Cablevision offers a similar kind of package. So, you know, it's a little bit above the $60 level. You can get the basic stuff.
But I see a problem, Eric. That's $66 as an introductory offer for the first year. What does it become for the second and third year? Over to you, Eric, KGYW.
That business kind of went away a couple of years ago, because when they started doing installation without having a two-year contract, the advertising in their system changed a lot. The Fios has a tendency to add, like, I just got a notice from Fios that, oh, you now have a discontinued modem. We're going to charge you $2.50 a month for a maintenance fee. Like that. If that modem is obsolete, then provide me with one that's not. They'll sell you a used one for $59.95, which is pathetic. But, you know, they play games. What happens is, let me let it drop. Every year they change their offers, so to speak, and what happens is they raise the price, and you threaten you go to cable, and then they bring it back down again, or you actually go to cable, and they bring it up, and you threaten to go to Fios, and they bring it back down again, or you go over to Fios. But you can keep it under the $80 level for a long period of time without going through that garbage.
Okay, except then for the problem of getting from Faroe Island to the mainland. That sounds like the right way to go for Fire Island, doesn't it, Eric? KE2EJ, KE2IW.
I said. Here we go.
It is. But it's economics. How much do they want to spend for, you know, how many customers do they have? Is it even worth it for them to go there? The way they're behaving, it sounds like they don't care about them and they don't want anything to do with it.
Okay, we've kept John waiting a long time. K2IZ, K2IW, go ahead, John.
Just point of information. If you draw a dial tone out of Fire Island, 99, most of the spots, you're pulling dial tone out of Central Islip, Central Office, not Bayshore. You feed from Central Islip to Bayshore, Bayshore, underwater, over to Fire Island. You still have a microwave link, but... the company decided to save money, and we don't really need it. And the weekend before they pulled the plug, somebody hit the cable, and we had to activate the microwave link. That was fun. But, you know, for something like Fire Island, if you want to, you know, how are you going to hook into the outside world over there? And if you're going to run a cable across the Great South Bay, I think there's a little thing called environment impact statements that you'd have to... It's not like the old days, Dick, where you can, you know, okay, we're going to lay a cable, we're going to trench, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Nowadays, if you did something like that, my God, the cost, you know, the survey, we have to do an environmental impact, we have to do this, we have to do that. You know, just, but... And then again, the other comment was... we dropped it a minute. We fought for Fios in town of Babylon. The village of Babylon doesn't have it. And as I stated to the town board, if I don't like somebody's service, I'd have two other places to go. The town of Brookhaven doesn't have that. They only have Fios, and they only have cable and satellite. So, you know, the more competition you get. And the thing is, most people, admit it, most people nowadays won't, you know, make a phone call. They'll bitch about the phone bill, but they won't make the phone call. It's the 1%, and probably most of us are hams, that'll do it and say, hey, wait a minute, what's this charge here? $2 a month? You know, get the modem out. Oh, you don't want to give me a modem out here? I'll tell you what. Let me call Cablevision, and I'm going to disconnect. And all of a sudden, you know, you might see a modem come flying in the door very, very quickly. You just have to know how to pull the chain. But anyway, you know, it just goes back to the original question. What happens if Long Island gets nailed with a major catastrophic storm? and you know, they want to do away with fiber. They don't want to put it out because it costs money. It costs salaries for the line crews. We dropped again.
Yeah, let me interrupt you, John. That cable that goes under the sea between Fire Island and the mainland right now, which I think is it goes into Babylon or Islip, is that a coaxial cable or is it a fiber cable? Does it have the ability to have enough bandwidth for satellite television? Back to you, John.
I have no idea, Dick. It's, you know, it's just been too long. I could guess what it was. I know years ago, Shelter Island, I got sent over there for a data circuit for the New York State Police. And I met the chief of police at the time, who was a ham. He passed away, God rest his soul. And the first thing he told me was, I just called North and South Ferry, your phone truck don't get off this island until this is fixed. Well, at the time, we were feeding underwater from Greenport, copper. And he goes, wait a minute. We just had a bond passed to put a fiber optic cable over there by the courthouse. Why can't we switch over to that? I said, okay. I called up one of the engineers. He goes, we can't do that. I says, why not? Well, we can. I said, I'll tell you what. I'm going to put the chief of police on the phone. And you explain to him why we can't do it. 2 days later, I met the splicers over by the fiber, and they transferred my circuit over.
If I need another fiber channel from Fire Island to the mainland, what stops me from using the Robert Moses Bridge? Over to you, John.
Where are you going to terminate it at? I hate to answer a question with a question. Where are you going to terminate it at?
Okay, you seem to see there's a problem at one end or the other. Is the problem at the southern end or the northern end? Where's the problem now, John? Go ahead.
As I had to dig through this. Central office on Fire Island is Ocean Beach. That feeds out of Central Islip. Coast Guard Station, and that end down there, feeds out of Babylon Central Office. I know because I had to try and make a fax line work. And then I had to explain to the Coast Guard why it wasn't going to work, because Babylon Central Office, corner of Montauk and 109, cable runs down Montauk Highway through the village of Babylon, through West Islip, goes down, and then right before it crosses the first bridge, there's a major cross box right there. Crosses the first bridge, as soon as you get over the first bridge, and again, this is about 25 years ago, there's a splice right there. It's all copper cable.
Okay, you've given me a lot of information, but I didn't get an answer, I'm sorry to say. Maybe because I'm a little bit ignorant of the geography here. I may have to run a couple of extra miles of cable along Fire Island, but can I get from the major junctions on Fire Island, if I'm willing to lay some extra cable, probably fiber, can I get to the southern end of Robert Moses Bridge, or is there something in between? Over to you, John, KQIW.
You can run it. It's just who's going to pay for it. And again, same thing to Jones Beach. That was all copper cable. What a nightmare that was. It just boils down, and I'll say it on the air. You guys know I'm a retired phone company, and that's why I stayed craft, because they didn't like my comments. One major location, they had one fiber pipe feeding in. I says, what happens if that fiber pipe breaks? Oh, it'll never break. Well, guess what? It broke. When you start mentioning sonnet rings, well, gee, we got this building here, and it's a major importance, so we're going to feed in one direction from one central office and the other direction from another central office. So if one end fails, if one central office fails, if one switch fails, we can have redundancy going back around the other way. Looks great. Unfortunately, it costs money. Okay, and in today's environment, anyway, even back 20, 25 years ago, they don't want to spend the money. They'll nickel and dime it to death. That's why they had that one fiber break in front of Security Dodge in Amityville. And they found out that they wiped out both the SS-7 signaling links, primary and secondary, instead of having redundant routes. Hey, we can save money. Okay, we're going to play the percentages. Let me drop it a minute.
Let me break in with you here, John. You had a fiber cable that was quite successful on Fire Island until Hurricane Sandy. Hurricane Sandy broke that cable. What would it cost to re-splice the chunk of cable that got damaged? Over to you, John.
Before Sandy, the Fire Island was copper, all copper. The outside plant got wiped out by Sandy, and Verizon came in and said, we're going to give you this service here. It's all microwave. It's all VHF, UHF. Again, you're better at that technology than I am. Okay? This is what we're going to give you. We're not going to spend the money. We can save a buck by doing this. And the people got up in arms. They said, look, you know, this is no good. It doesn't work. We can't do this. We can't do that. The whole bit. It's like, as an aside, Oak Island years ago, when satellite first came out, satellite TV, every month would dial into the box over on Fire Oak Island and get back the, okay, how many movies did you order? Well, guess what? Physics of copper. Copper was too long to have data service work. So now the satellite companies are bitching, we can't access our box. Well, guess what? It's a thing of fiber. But again, from the start, before Sandy, Fire Island, copper. Have a nice day. Copper plant got wiped out. Verizon came in and said, we're not replacing copper. We're not giving you fiber. We're going wireless.
Okay, I didn't notice it. You're telling me there is no fiber per se on Fire Island. It's all copper, you call it. Does that mean cable TV? Was the cable TV also supplying phone and internet before it got wiped out? John, go ahead.
I don't know. Again, before Sandy, all copper. After Sandy, phone company says, we're not replacing the outside plant. Finally, the people over there bitched. Now they got fiber. Okay, they had to actually go to the state and complain about the poor service that they finally put fiber in coming out of the Ocean Beach CO.
Okay, run that by again. There is a fiber channel to mainland over to Fire Island now. What's the standard?
Again, I'm gone a few years. As far as I know, you know, with the guys, you know, people I talk to, after Fiasco Sandy, all right, not feeding across from the main, you know, from the big island to the small island, the feed from the Ocean Beach Central office, which used to be all copper, is now fiber. Okay? Again, the feed from, I don't know what they're feeding from the big island with. I don't know how it's going over. It could be fiber. I don't know. But, like I say, just right now, over there now, to each individual house, there is now fiber. My question is, again, if we get another Sandy that goes in there now and wipes out the outside plant, what I'm talking about, let me drop it a minute. What I'm talking about by the outside plant is the telephone poles. Okay, tide comes in, wipes out the telephone poles, drags down the cable, drags down the power, everything is gone. A couple days later, they go over there, they do the survey, there's nothing in the air. Every telephone pole is now floating around somewhere heading towards the Bahamas. Everything's gone. Now do they go in there again and say, okay, we have to go in there. LIPO is going to put up the poles. They have to. But now is Cablevision, the phone company, going to say, look, you know, we're going to spend money again, or are they going to turn around and say, we're going to give you, what, 5G? And again, it goes back to the original question. We're going to give you 5G. Okay, fine. LIPA puts up their high-tension poles. Okay? Within a couple of weeks, you now have arcing and sparking up on the poles. Are the people going to have a reliable phone service with the, you know, microwave stuff? And again, feeding out to a pole. Let me drop it a minute. Out to a pole and then having an antenna at the top of the pole that, and each house has its own unit to send and receive data, TV, phones, the whole bit. Are they going to have a problem with the arcing and the sparking that is so prevalent on the South Shore or Long Island with moisture in the atmosphere. Over.
That's a tough one, John. I'm having trouble believing that the microwave link is going to satisfy everybody. You've got the Herschel fiber right now going. Somebody demanded fiber, and they got fiber. Why isn't the fiber going everywhere on the island? And how does LIPA power get to the island? That must be an undersea cable, isn't it, John? Go ahead.
Yes, it is, and the tech that used to work on it, remember, he lived right across the street from the Ocean Beach Central. Again, Dick, all the cable that was lost there, that was wiped out in Sandy, has now, I'm assuming, I know what that means, has been replaced with fiber feeding into the Ocean Beach Central office, okay, that feeds out where most of the dial tone comes from. All right, so I'm gathering that, yes, fiber is there, okay, but again, what happens? All we need is, you know, one major storm and comes the water and it wipes out everything. And now all of a sudden the new fiber that they've laid in that now everybody has that can access video phone the whole nine yards. Now the second time around, Verizon says, that's it, we're done. We just sold off. Let me drop in a minute.
Is all the power going out to that island one single cable? Is the so-called LIPA cable one single cable feeding that whole island? On top of that, Sandy is a once per 50 year event. We can talk about it happening tomorrow. It's going to be a lot longer than that. Is there one major cable feeding power to that whole Fire Island? Over to you, John, KQI, wait for the beeps.
I don't know. I don't remember. I couldn't even hazard a guess. But again, you know, once in 50 years, hey, okay, fine. I've also been denied homeowner's insurance by my new company because I live in a floodplain. I looked on the thing, and I have to have a high tide for a Cat 3 to have water in my house, even though I'm close on the South Shore. But because they said I live in a potential floodplain, they will not give me homeowner's insurance. I have to go to the certain companies. And again, just back to the thing. If Verizon turns around and do what they did in Texas, Ohio, and California, guess what? We just sold the whole place over to Frontier. Friend of mine has Frontier. Her phone went out. Her father died. She calls Frontier. Frontier says 2 to 3 weeks to fix the copper phone line coming from the central office to your house. I got hold of her. I said, hey, do me a favor. Call these hoople heads back up. Tell them you want your cell phone, you want your home phone number call transferred in the switch over to your cell phone number. And their reply was, we don't know how to do that. So, again, you know, you understand what I'm saying, Dick? Nobody wants in the business anymore because it costs money.
Yeah, it looks like we haven't solved that problem. I know Rich is waiting to say a comment, and then we had another person that we only heard a fraction of a syllable. N2EO, keep it brief, Rich. KQRIW, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick. You mentioned Eric mentioned $80 or so a month for cable. I wish, would you believe we're paying close to $400? We've got 5G internet. We've got the full television package, what they call gold. And we've got telephone. Me and Patty share the bill, but she's a movie freak, so that's what we have. Back to net, and so we go.
$400 a month. What percentage of that do you believe, Rich, is premium television channels? What percentage of that? If I looked at your price of cable TV, so to speak, for bare bones versus all of the premium channels, is $200 of that premium channels? N2EO, K2RIW.
At least, Dick. I don't watch a lot of TV, but Patty does. So she would know better than me. But we have movies on demand, we have all the
You're saying you're getting almost all those services for $350, Eric? And how did you negotiate that? Into EO? Did you write a bit?
I don't know what you mean by negotiate, but me and Patty split the bill.
Okay, you actually met me. No, I don't have all of the premium services. I just had HBO, and they gave me Showtime for free. But if you get all the services, 100 megabit up and down, and you've got more than one phone line, you're paying between $350 and $400. But essentially, all that money is going to various different MSOs that provide the premium content. So, you know, the $80 for the bare nothing is a long distance away from the premium every K2IWK to each other.
Good to know, Eric. There's another person who wants to make a comment. Who was that? K2RIW?
Thank you, Dick. K2RIW.
Hearing you loud and clear, George. Wait for the beeps.
About the integrity of whether it's coax or fiber going to the shores of the islands, the south side of Long Island, so to say. Keep in mind, you know, the phone companies were able, and let me say AT&T in general, was able to expand the continent with analog cables, with to Europe, Cat 1 through 7 were the names of the cables, and eventually in 89, they cut over to their first Cat 8, which was their first digital cable. The issues were what these cables from all these years was dealing with the massive turbulence in the Atlantic Ocean in the underground as it was spun. Let me recycle this.
Yeah, and back off a little bit on the mic, George. You're over-modulating a little.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but the things over the years was how to maintain it, and they would very, very rarely go out of service that needed a full repair. They went to the digital cables in 1989. I know I was part of the first cutover. And the what I'm getting at is if you want to go to Fire Island or you want to go to different parts of shores of Long Island, I believe it was K2EJ was mentioning that, they don't want to go for it. They don't want to spend the money for it. And I don't understand, because this is not a massive amount of...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
...service from people that they have been giving for years. They would have to de-tariff it after they put in a tariff or an equivalent or better service. Or are they waiting for another company to come up? Let me recycle this. Waiting for another company to come up with a better technology that they can buy or swallow.
Yeah, there's a lot of that jazz going on. Look what you started here, Paul. You asked a simple-sounding question. Boy, it got hot and heavy. But people are interested, and a lot of good information passed back and forth. John, you use your judgment, KC2WGB, of the mailbag questions that we haven't gotten to yet, which we should have a couple of hours ago. Is there anything in there hot and heavy enough that we should go to at least one of those? Your choice. Or should we just jump over to the space report? KC2WGB. The mailbag champion, K2RIW. Go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Very good, Dick. Oh, this worked out perfectly because I have one question here from a young man, but it's a question for Paul. And so I can ask that question, and Paul can pick it up and carry on, if that's all right with you.
Sounds like you got a plan. Go for it.
Okay. KC2WGV. The question is, in fact, I had spoken to Paul about this, something I had seen a little blurb on the internet about it, and this young gentleman wrote in and wanted to know if Paul knows anything about the supernova that was that happened recently, and there was no obstructing gases or particles. They got a pretty good view of it, and Paul said he was going to see if he could research it. If he did, fine. If not, we can talk about it next week. So back to you, Dick. KC2WGV.
Okay, it's time for space report number either 213 or 214. Paul and I think there's a one number disagreement there. Minor problem. Go right ahead and up on WS2N. Be careful with those early questions you ask, because look what you created. You got a Paul, KQIW.
That's all I wanted to do, is get my pole removed. Very well done. Very interesting. Net. Great topics. What am I up to? 215, I have. Whatever. John, I did research that. A lot of things came up about supernovas exploding. And I even searched one of the magazines, but I didn't see it. And, I thought maybe they were talking about the Crab Nebula, because that was one that blew up many years ago. And they just found out recently that the timing on it was way off. You know, they thought it happened, in one period of time, and now they found that it's probably 1,000 years before that. And what's left is a pulsar in the middle. So if that was the topic, I don't know. That's the only thing I could find recently on it, John. Back to you.
Do you want me to call up and let me so it doesn't go off? No. Let's give up near midnight, because I've got to do something tomorrow also. John, I wonder if, John, there's a way you can get a little bit more information as to what was the name or the time or whatever about the particular supernova. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I will check that out. Maybe I can bring it up next week. I know the constellation, it started with a C, and I'm trying to remember the constellation name, but apparently it happened within the last month, so it's quite recent, so maybe it'll come up, but I'll investigate a little further, and maybe next week I can broach Paul with this question again. Back to you, Dick.
Sounds good, John. Paul, you've got it. Wait till the beeps.
Very good. This is WS2N. Yeah, well, and that report that I told you just came out recently, about a week or two ago. So that's what I'm going by, and I thought maybe that was part of it. But apparently not. There must be something new that I don't know about. And I know when there's a gamma ray burst, they have the Swift telescope, and that'll move into position. Other telescopes after that are programmed to automatically drop what they're doing and aim toward a gamma ray burst. But, this apparently is a supernova. So we'll look into it, and maybe you could find out, John, a little information. Email the guy back or something. We're out of time, but there was a spacewalk on Friday where the two American astronauts, Jeff Williams and Kate Rubens, attached the ITER docking column, let me drop it, to the International Space Station. They had to bolt it up to PMA-2, that's pressure mating adapter 2. There's three pressure mating adapters aboard the space station, and three will come into play later. They have to relocate that. Right now it's not being used, and they'll relocate that in about a year and a half and attach another ITER. An ITER is an international docking adapter that's been developed by Boeing. We've changed over from the old Shell-era docking collar on the PMA pressure mating adapter. We've switched over from that one to this new one that's been developed, which there's a lot of improvements. I can go into that if you want. But they successfully did this. They did about a 5.5-hour EVA to accomplish this with the Dexter. Dexter is a robotic piece of equipment. equipment that's mounted on the outside of the space station that gets attached to the Canada robot on arm that's attached to the space station. They have a 50-foot arm, actually 57-foot arm, and that attaches to, in this case, the robotic Dexter, and then that in turn pull the Eider out of the back of the SpaceX Dragon, which has been sitting up there for quite a while. And in fact, SpaceX will be bringing Dragon back August 23rd, I believe another week, a couple of days probably. They're going to get ready to do that. But they put it in front of the pressure mating adapter, and the two spacewalking astronauts worked with the robot to attach the Ida to...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
From U.S. soil again. Any future spacecraft that are being developed will have the Eider capabilities to attach to the new NASA International Docking Adapter. And that includes SpaceX with their crewed version. They're going to have a crew of four people eventually going up on the new Dragon spacecraft that's being developed. And that will probably test fly probably the end of 2017 to the space station, and then follow them probably in a month or two with the Boeing Starliner, CST-100 Starliner that Boeing is developing, which will also be able to bring up a crew of four people. That's pretty good. And what was nice about the Ida mission was you had two American space walkers, and they're both hams. They both have their ham tickets. Dick, I'm going to turn it over to you. Any questions? We'll keep it short. This is WS2N.
Very good, Paul. You've got another 12 minutes, so not quite that short. I wish I remember the name of the astronaut who I was reading his story on one of the YouTube videos. Yeah, I think it was a YouTube video. Maybe. You probably know which astronaut it was. This astronaut did his first spacewalk. Was he on the space shuttle, or was he on the International Space Station? I think he was on the space shuttle. His first spacewalk, everything was going fine. All of a sudden, he developed an intense pain in his left eye. It felt like somebody was stabbing him in the left eye. Didn't know what the hell was going on. He had to close that eye. He couldn't even keep it open. The pain was so bad. And that eye started watering. And the next thing happened is that the watering of the eye was so severe that the water bridged over his nose and went into the right eye. And the right eye started paining him. Now he's essentially blind because he was doing a spacewalk with another astronaut. He was able to get back into the space shuttle, and everything turned out okay. But there's two things you got to worry about with when you're doing a spacewalk. Let me drop it. If you develop the smallest amount of leak in the water system that's part of the cooling coils that go across your body, there's a whole bunch of cooling coils to keep your body at the right temperature. And if any of that develops a water leak, you'd say, all right, big deal, a little bit of water leak. Well, when you got a water droplet floating around freely inside of the helmet, it's very different than if you had water droplets floating inside of the space shuttle. In front of the space shuttle, you see a water droplet, you wave it out of your way with your hand. Inside of that spacesuit, you cannot do that. Your hand inside that helmet. And if that water droplet gets sucked into your mouth or your nose while you're breathing, you can literally start drowning. So about the only thing you can do is maybe you can move your head and your whole body in such a way that the chunk of water will splash against the side and hopefully it'll stick. Freely floating water in the helmet of a space shuttle, in the helmet of the portable life support system, is a very dangerous condition. What they finally discovered, what happened to this poor astronaut, let me drop it.
That was Chris Hadfield, by the way, from Canada.
It's coming back now. Hadfield sounds right. The cleaning fluid, the fluid that they put on on the inside of the helmet of the spacesuit was an anti-fogging solution. Somehow, some of that anti-fogging solution made a small droplet that got deposited in his eye, and it created this intense pain. And that eye watering washed some of the stuff across the bridge of his nose into the other eye, and he's essentially blinded. Thank goodness there wasn't a whole lot of other water droplets floating around inside the helmet with him. So the risky things that you would take for granted, just a couple of droplets of water floating around in your helmet, can literally drown you if you can't keep it out of your breathing system when you're trying to breathe. If you're a person who's not a smoker, and if those very valuable hairs that are in your trachea, your windpipe, those very valuable hairs will take any junk that gets picked up by your breathing system and will wave them toward your throat so that you can swallow them and getting it out of the way. Well, many people also have, and I'm one of them, have a very strong foreign object reflex. If a drop of water or anything else gets into my trachea, my windpipe will close itself off. It's a very uncomfortable situation. And so it could happen to an astronaut. So tell us what you remember of this particular incident where he literally had to be rescued because he essentially became blinded because of the anti-fogging solution that got into his left eye. WS2N, K2LIW, you got a ball.
I remember the situation, but he, because of this reason, what happened to him, he made this observation. They found out later what it was. They no longer use the cleaning system for the visors after it's done away with that. He eventually became one of the commanders, in fact, the first Canada commander of the International Space Station. So, they did had what you can they consider an abort EVA, different than the ones that are just terminated when they have a problem. You might remember Scott Kelly had a partner from Europe, from a European Space Agency. Was it Tim Peake? I think it was. Might have been the American, I forgot, but his partner had an eye problem as well with the water in the spacesuit, and they just terminated it because it wasn't that much of an emergency. And in fact, this EVA, they completed everything that they were going to do with the IDA, including covering up a hemispherical reflector that they no longer use, that the shuttle used to use, that was attached to the PMA, and they open up a new one on the ITER. Meanwhile, they're done, and they got an okay to have an extended mission to do some get-ahead work when we drop it. Jeff Williams was going to go out to the starboard side, and they needed pictures of the alpha magnetic spectrometer. They have some insulation problems and this and that, and they were going to look at it and take pictures. They canceled it. They terminated the EVA, and they didn't abort it. When they terminated, they just say, "Well, okay, we'll just put stuff away properly where it is, and just bring the EVA to a close." An abort mission. That's it. You drop everything and just get back to the Quest Lab and get back inside into the airlock. So there's a difference there. And this time they terminated it because it's hearing. And it is right here. He lost comm in that. And that's pretty much a good reason to flight rules to pretty much to cancel it, because you need 2 years. One is a backup. Really, you have right here and left here. So they shut that mission down. So they'll go back and do that again on September 2nd. They're going to go out and do another EVA. Nothing to do with the docking collar. But pretty good. Watched the whole thing. By the way, Kate Rubens is crossed the pond in Connecticut. She comes out of Connecticut. Expert in DNA and all. That's the reason she's really up there. So we'll turn back to you, Dick. WS2N.
As you can see, in the weightless continuous environment where you're wearing a spacesuit during an extravehicular activity, EVA, there's all kinds of crazy risks that you accept that are not obvious at first. Droplets of water can drown you because they're floating around in a helmet. Droplets of water that get into your eye because it contains any other substance, your eye is very sensitive, can give you a problem where you may not be able to see. If you lose one of the earphones on your headset, you got to worry that if you lose the other one and you can't communicate with anybody, you don't know what you're saying is being heard, and they could be giving you life-threatening protection information, which you can no longer hear. You got to make sure you can hear it. One of the things that I pictured, and I wonder if you've ever pictured this one, Paul, if you were completely floating free because you made a mistake, whenever you leave the inside of the space shuttle and you go to the outside, you have to make sure that you're continuously tethered. They've got the equivalent of a carabiner on the end of an expendable cord, a wire rope, so to speak, that reels out, that keeps you continuously attached. If you make the mistake of becoming detached and you start floating away from the space shuttle, they do have, in some cases, an emergency system which allows you to rocket yourself back, a small amount of thrusting. Let me drop this. So in theory, you can thrust yourself, if you're wearing this protection circuit, you can thrust yourself back to the space shuttle. But when you do come back to the space shuttle, you have to make sure you aim for a place that has a handhold. If, for instance, you come up back toward the great big round nose of the space shuttle, if you touch that nose because you've rocketed yourself back to that position, and maybe you can find a handhold by grabbing inside of one of the reaction control rockets or something like that. But if there's nothing but a smooth, round surface in front of you, you can't touch it, because no matter how lightly you touch it, it will propel you away from the space shuttle again. You have to repeat the process. You have to make sure you aim yourself for a place that has a handhold. That's not so obvious. WS2N, K2IW. I wonder if you've ever pictured that one, Paul. Maybe I've described that once before.
Yeah, they were really short of it on handhelds on the Mir space station when the Russians had that up there. And we used to go visit in our shuttles and dock with them. And that's actually how we got started with the older system that the shuttle had for docking. We needed to dock with the Mir. I think we had five missions that went up there to Mir. And any EVAs, there were problems with handhelds on the International Space Station. Not so. There's thousands of them all over the place. They're all number two and brightly colored. And if they get away from it, they'll be able to find a handheld when they come back. And they have nitrogen little jets that they use to move around. Every EVA that's being done, they have what's called a safer unit. It looks like it's part of their backpack, but it completely disconnects. So they do have that. It was fun watching them test it out in the earlier shuttle missions in the back of the cargo bay. First couple of guys testing the safer packs out. Now, this is a big difference than the man maneuvering units, the big full-size units that they originally had back in the 1980s. The safety units are evolved, and it's an evolution of the man maneuvering units that they used maybe a half a dozen times on the space shuttle. Back to you, Dick.
I'm guessing that safer unit has a very limited number of seconds of thrusting you can get out of it, and not a great deal of force either. So if you start floating away from the space shuttle or the International Space Station, you've got to start applying that real soon, because the longer you wait...
Repeater, timeout.
The longer you wait, the more difficult it is to get back to the right spot in time. Okay, that was space. This was TechNet number 1615. We got quite sidetracked by an interesting set of subjects tonight. As I see it, those poor guys on Fire Island, they're being raked over the coals, as I see it, because of Hurricane Sandy. And they're not yet back to where they used to be.